I'm Susan Montanaro, and you're listening to Dreams and Detours, a show about the life we plan to have versus the one we're living, for better or not. Everybody has a story, and I believe we find ourselves in each other's stories. Hi, it's Susan Montanaro. My guest today is Sherilyn Decker, a speaker, author, and coach who has helped hundreds of women turn their struggles into a source of strength. Sherilyn shared her big pivot after being laid off from a corporate job and how she turned that into her greatest opportunity. There are silver linings in every situation, and if you look for them, those golden nuggets can be the transformation of a lifetime. Please welcome Sherilyn Decker. It's good to have you here. It's good to get our conversation going. So thank you for being patient.
Oh, you're welcome.
So yeah, nice to see you today. So let's just dive in, because I know that you have in your life now become a spiritual coach, and you're working closely with different people and with clients to align their lives with their beliefs and the structure in which they live. But before we really dive into the nuts and bolts of what that looks like and the great work that you're doing, let's go back a little bit and say, you know, like I do this with like anyone who is on their own as an entrepreneur, especially coaches or spiritual advisors or people that are doing financial work. But we always want to say, like, where did that come from? Where did that start? Because I feel like life happens, and when things either go sour or when they take that detour, right? Hence dreams and detours. We find a part of ourselves and we discover something that we weren't paying close attention to. And it's what then births out of us that creates this new journey, this new skill, or this new interest and desire to pursue more. And so I would love to start there with you if we could.
That is absolutely right. It's one of those life happens events. And mine was a phone call. And I'll never forget hearing the words, "I'm sorry, your job has been eliminated."
Oof, yes.
And I can't tell you I remember much more of the conversation, because at that moment I was in such of a state of, oh no. All my mind was filled with all kinds of questions. You know, what does this mean? Can we make it financially? I'm just sitting here even thinking about that initial phone call, and I'm just feeling the rush of emotions that just kind of bubble up to the surface when you're like, I don't have a job.
Right.
And I was the breadwinner. We were living outside of Washington, D.C. at the time, and it's a type of area that's very affluent, and it requires two incomes just to survive. And we were surviving, and we were thriving, and we were living comfortably. And that was a real shock, not just to my finances, but it was a shock to my marriage. And it was like, all of a sudden we became confronted with, you know, what now? And right. That was the moment that changed everything and changed the complete trajectory of my life. Because up to that point, I had been working in corporate America. I'd been climbing the ladder. I'd been doing well. I'd been successful. And I thought I had it all. And then when it came crashing down and I'm sitting there in the bottom of my pit, I come face to face with, who am I?
Isn't that a reckoning?
It is. It very
yeah. And everything is so tethered to, you know, the financial aspect of being successful in our careers. You know, even when we love what we're doing and everything is on track from a personal satisfaction perspective, you know, the financial part of it really just, you know, brings it all. It's the glue. It brings it all together. And it's what allows us to live where we live, do what we do, and fortify our kids, if you have them, to have the lives that they have. So there's just so many areas that now are deeply impacted. And you sound like you faced that as well.
I did. And I think, you know, just to kind of correct one thing, I thought it was the glue, but it wasn't the glue. What I can tell you now, looking back, this was in 2015. So looking back now, it's been almost seven years now. Looking back, I can tell you that what the glue was that completely held my life together was my faith. That is what had the foundation that said, it, you know, what can be shaken will be shaken, but what couldn't be shaken was my faith in God. And so that was when I really began to see that it wasn't my finances that was gluing me together. It wasn't it at all. It wasn't even my job, because, and I was living in an area where job mattered, and we care as a society about what job someone has. I mean, I'm having these conversations with my teenagers right now of what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'm thinking what most of us are thinking, can you make a living on that?
Right. Instead of saying, can you be a nice, compassionate person, a good person, right?
Does that make you happy? Will you be able to help others? Like, there's so many other measurements that make something a satisfactory career, and it's not money. Right. And so even I'm still finding myself being like, you can't make money doing that.
Well, because it's our first, we're very trained societally to think in the vein of how do we keep ourselves afloat? And everything, again, is really tied back to the financial barometer of safety and success versus too much risk and being, you know, too insecure on a financial level. So we're in autopilot in our thinking, sadly, still. And isn't it interesting how you had a layoff that awakened you to your priorities and really what's driving you and what's keeping you afloat emotionally, spiritually, physically. Whereas you look at people in their 40s and 50s who get to that point in their lives where they're like, but there has to be more, there has to be more. And they're kind of with their hands up in the air, searching and reaching for something different. And I mean, it's just a daily occurrence now, people taking a new pathway out, detouring into a new career or journeying into a new spiritual track. But everyone is desperate and hungry for that at some point. And it's just this function of, you know, waking up to that moment where you've had enough. In your case, they were done and it was a layoff and that's different. But still, I mean, it's almost like bravo that that happens. Like, what a blessing that that happened, because it allows you to prioritize your life sooner than the later, which is usually the burnout stage.
That's right. And it's a matter of, I mean, there's two things that you said there. It's a matter of if. Not, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
When,
it's a matter of
yes.
When we all get to this place. And you're right. I am in the place where I can look back and say that was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Right.
As hard as that was to walk through the financial turmoil that that created in my life, it made sure that my trust was in the right place. Because when my trust was in myself and I became my provider, the burden of that versus trusting in, and for me, I completely believe that God is my provider and I completely trust in him. Is that nervous to trust in somebody you can't see? Absolutely. But I've seen time and time and time and time again how he's trustworthy, he's faithful, and I can believe that he said, if the Bible says that he's my provider, then I can stand on that and trust that, okay, this is yours.
No, I think that's brilliant. I think that, you know, for in your case, you know, it's God and it's the Bible. In other people's cases, it's their selected religion and the doctrine that accompanies it. And I think that when you have faith in your spiritual and religious path, then yes, you know, people do give up their control and their interest to have proven tangible, and they can say, no, I think, you know, on the faith level, I can believe in something more, you know, mystical, something more spiritual, something that I believe is moving my world and is certainly fortifying me. And in your case, you are absolutely a person who is able to do that. And I think that's, you know, it's tremendous. So
and that
bravo.
Has become the glue. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no, that has become your glue. And I love that. So imagine that you are now raising kids and young adults to believe in their own ability to let go, if you will, and to find the faith and the pathway that supports them. But let's talk about the work that you've been able to cultivate, really, because now you've pivoted in your career path and in your life. You've been able to discover this whole other part of you that is taking front and center and guiding you. And so how did you then decide that you wanted to turn that into a coaching, you know, type of business or a pathway for yourself? Like, what really led you to feel that because you found it, that it meant that it was going to be successful for other people? So that's a question I ask coaches. It's like, we all have self-discovery, but just because we do doesn't mean that it's for everyone else. Like, that's ours, you know? And so what makes this work and makes it capable of being a business?
Yes. And I think I can't say that I was looking for this. I can't say that I found it. I can say it found me in the sense that when I hit rock bottom, I did all the things that you do. I sent my resume out to my network, right? 80% of jobs come from your network. I sent my resume out to my network. I told everybody I was laid off. I interviewed every single door that opened. I had a headhunter. I did all the things, Susan, all the things that you do when you don't have a job to go find a job to replace my income quickly.
Right.
And every single door closed in my face. Mm. And so then it's like, are you serious? Are you serious right now that I can't find anything, that everything that my network is sending over, I'm either overqualified for, or, you know, the next step was for me to be, I was in the C-suite when I was laid off. And so that means that I was already in executive leadership. So that means I was looking for a role like that. So if you take a step down, then people think, well, then are you gunning for my job? No, I just want a paycheck.
Like, right. No, and that's hard when you're in the C-suite, you know, it's a much smaller pool. And so finding that next, you know, opportunity becomes that much harder. I totally understand that.
And it's a long road because there's lots of people to interview with. There are lots of candidates. It can take a longer period of time to fill a job opening like that because of the position of leadership it's in. So I knew all of that, yet every single door closed. You're not the right person. You know, whatever it was for a fit just didn't work. So at that time, I hired my own coach and spiritual director to kind of say, let's deal with the stuff that's coming in my heart, right? The stuff that the trauma that I was dealing with from lost my job and everything that meant to, you know, the pieces of me that were unraveling as a person. And then let's talk about what I need to be when I grow up and what that means from a job standpoint. So we're doing all of this discovery as we were talking about. And one of the things that is a popular question when you're looking for a job is what are your strengths? And so as we were doing all this evaluation of what it is that I'm good at, what I saw in my work history is this thread of me being really good at building up people and launching them into new things. And that meant that, you know, in the workforce, this meant that I would grow a staff and grow a team, and then they'd go work for someone else. Mm-hmm. And then they would outgrow the role that I had for them because I had a small team, and they could go grow and be directors. And some of them are vice presidents now. And so I could build people personally, professionally. And then some of the ones that would come into my office to meet with me one-on-one, like after something had happened or they wanted to vent, then I began to also work with people to grow them spiritually in a covert way in a work environment, just kind of encouraging them and who they are in the inside, right? Mm-hmm. So we saw this thread of me building people up personally, professionally, and spiritually. And we realized, well, that's really the heart of a coach.
Right.
And then I was like, is there such a thing? Like, I didn't even know that this world existed of coaching.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, okay. And then I decided, well, I didn't really want to go back to school to get any certifications, but I knew the types of people that I serve, those things are important. So I went back and took a whole lot of classes and said, okay, let's go get the certifications that you hang on the wall that matter to some people and matter not to others.
Right.
And I did that and started working on getting the hours under my belt to do that. And so that's kind of where I'm at today.
I love that. I think, you know, those are the stories and those are the journeys that we can really like admire. And those are the leaders that we can really feel an attraction toward in terms of, you know, sitting with them and coming through our own situations. And so I always love a good foundation with a coach where they've had their own experience and they've just built it all back up. And like you, you know, kind of really taken a great look working with someone else to say, you know, what do I do best and how do I enjoy that? And how do I get to now recreate my path forward, my career, you know, forward and do this work that's really meaningful and that you have tremendous success with. So I think that's brilliant. So now are you working primarily with women? Because I noticed that that seems to be more the demographic that you look at. And are these women who came from similar corporate backgrounds, or are they just women of all walks in terms of their abilities, their careers, their desire?
In the very beginning, I was grateful for anybody who would work with a newbie,
sure.
Right? And so, you know, here we are almost, a couple years in now, and I've really identified that the people I work well with are entrepreneurs and corporate women in leadership or emerging leaders. And so that can look a wide variety of different ways. I've had people across many different industries, which is kind of fantastic. I've had, you know, healthcare to real estate, all kinds of different things, but these are people that are leaders that are building and growing teams. And then from an entrepreneur, people who are building businesses. And while they might hire me for, hey, let's grow my business, that's not, I am not a business coach. Mm-hmm. I am a, you know, I'm going to work on internal stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's primarily helping people hear the voice of clarity for themselves and what that looks like in their situation when they're stuck. And for me, that my sweet spot is entrepreneurs and leaders.
So, yeah. And that's interesting that you actually noted, I am not a business coach, because you're not trying to utilize business tools and training and such. It's really working with the personal dilemmas that come into the workspace for a person in leadership and how they overcome their own insecurities, I imagine, and their own, and we use this expression often, and I believe you do in your book as well, the imposter syndrome, the, you know, looking to achieve and to get beyond that feeling of, you know, am I actually bringing anything or everything to the table that everyone is expecting from me? Can I do this? And how do I enrich and make this a better experience for those that now I have to manage and lead and show them what I've got? So yeah. I think that's an interesting twist.
It is. And there's a growth that we all go through as leaders. And there's some people that are super overconfident. And in that overconfidence, they make mistakes, like they're horrible leaders. They don't have good emotional intelligence. They think that, you know, they got there on their own. And so they don't feel like they need their team. And so there's all kinds of things on that end. And then there's the people who deal with insecurity, who deal with, you know, lack of confidence, who hear the voice of the imposter that says, you know, you're not worthy of this spot. And there's some of that. And so there's just kind of this balance. And then there's the people in between who kind of, you know, fit in along the middle somewhere in those ranges. And so I've worked with all kinds of leaders, because as you grow in your role as a leader, you're less of a doer. And so it really does matter how you show up in the world, who you are as a character being, who you are, how you treat other people, how you treat your clients, how you treat the, you know, the leadership above you and the people below you, because that is the character is the true heart of a leader. And so learning what that means and how somebody takes off the, I got here through my achievements, and then now they have no character to stand on. It can be difficult, or people who, you know, who are, I remember this one job that I got, you know, in transition, you know, before my business became able to support me. And I remember I was in this place where I was in a role that I had no leadership. I was just hired to do something as a consultant, right? Just come in, do this project and be done. But what stood out was my leadership abilities and how I am towards people. And then naturally stuff started gravitating towards me because I'm a good leader. I wasn't hired for that role. So it was just, you know, of recognizing that when we have that, those kind of character qualities, when that's the fruit of our life, then those opportunities will be naturally drawn to
the laws of attraction.
It is. And it's
absolutely
inner work. When we get the inner work right, then we can open ourselves up to what then we're supposed to be doing. And, you know, I'm just supposed to be building people.
No. And I think that that's brilliant. I love that. I think that that's brilliant. And I love the fact that you have the opportunity to deal with those who are on the more arrogant end of the spectrum, as opposed to the insecure end of the spectrum. Because I agree with you. I think that no one gets to where they are on their own, no matter how hard you work, no matter how much you dedicate your time, your energy, your smarts and wherewithal, you know, it does take a team. It is usually others outside of the individual. And it's really important, even if you want to take all the credit, it doesn't even matter, because when you get to a point where you are now responsible for others on your team, others who are rolling up their project work to make the, you know, the company shine, you shine, at the end of the day, to me, you're a servant to those people. You are a servant to those people. You are not the chief anything. You are a servant. And so you better be all team oriented and have that
and the ones
combination,
that
right?
Yes. And the ones that aren't, and the ones that are super arrogant, that's when, you know, that's when somebody else, another leader will be like, hey, I think you need a coach. Right. Or they'll be like, I can't promote.
If they're lucky, they get that.
Yes, that's right. Or I can't promote you to the next level unless we deal with some things. And most companies aren't equipped to do that.
Right.
And so I get some business that way too, where people will be like, okay, there's somebody on my team who I would love to promote, but I can't because they have these roadblocks that are in their way and sometimes they don't see them. And so then they will, you know, they can hire a coach to kind of do that. So that's kind of, those are my sweet spots.
I love that. I love that companies more and more are actually aware of and on board to utilize coaches for that very reason. You know, let's not wait until things have become, you know, untenable in the situation. Let's keep utilizing these tools as a growth and as an educational mechanism to keep everyone just streamlined and smoothly sailing up and, you know, and through. So that's beautiful. And so another question for you, because in your book, you know, you wrote a beautiful book, Roar Back, Transforming Struggle into Strengths or into Strength. And I love that it's, you know, it's your story. It's what worked for you. It's what your, you know, faith and what your journey really was all about, as you discovered and said earlier, that you sort of, you know, you give it up to God and that is where it works best for you. When you're working with other people, though, my question is, does it make any difference who it is that they believe in, or does it make any difference? Is it important to you that they have a similar either faith, whether it's the same or not? That's, I guess, part of the question. But is it important to you that you work with people who have faith at all and have a spiritual character and nature? Because I would imagine you can be confronted by people who are not open-hearted or open in that way, and they have not fortified their lives with any level of spirituality or religious, you know, direction. How important is that to you?
So I think as a coach, I can really coach anybody regardless of what it is that they believe. You know, there's been times where I have had people that I've coached that didn't realize I was coaching them. You know, those interactions that we have, and it just comes out of us, right? People who are coaches, just
natural.
Natural.
Yeah.
So I've had those situations. But I think when he goes back to that statement you had made about law of attraction, when I am completely solid in my faith, that's what attracts people. The people who are attracted to me and the type of work that I do are faith-based, and specifically they're Christian. So I end up working with Christian corporate women or Christian entrepreneurs just because that's who I am. And you naturally attract some of that. And so do I have a requirement? Absolutely not. If someone wants to work with me and knows, okay, I'm extremely faith-based, and that's going to ooze out of me because it's like a lemon, whatever you squeeze comes out. So that's going to come out of me. If that doesn't bother you, then I'm okay with that. But it has to be something that they're okay with, because it's not something I water down. It's just the lens that I work through. And you know, I recognize my bias in that way, and I'm okay with that. But yeah. I tend to, the majority of my clients are all, you know, have very similar, at least foundational beliefs to me. I mean, there's all kinds of layers for a belief system. But really, it's about confronting the things that we thought that we believed that served us that didn't. Because there were things that I learned in my faith tradition that were highly religious and legalistic, which is not stuff that I believe at all. There's degrees, I would say, of faith that, you know, that I do push the envelope on.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. And I, you know, I look across the spectrum of people like that have, you know, that are very well known, and, you know, they too are, you know, leading their lives with and certainly working in a capacity that would include, you know, all of their belief system. But like you, they perhaps are a realist, or there's a practical side, and, you know, there are things that don't work for them, and they're not shy to, you know, continue to stand in that as well. And not feel like they need to defend or apologize. So I think that's fantastic. So how has the year, now that we are resuming more and more of our in-person activities, how has this year been for you? And I know last year was a setback, just in an interesting way. I don't know that it was so much for all the coaches out there, because I feel like the world stopped, and I think people paused and took an inventory and perhaps even made lots of big and crazy choices and decisions, you know, and they had those detours come their way, forced or selected. And so how has this year been for you in terms of the way in which you're coaching and the types of clients that you're getting? Has it, have you seen a dramatic change in your work?
Yeah. So if I rewind a little bit to last year, when everything hit and, you know, businesses were closed down, that was a significant difference because for me, a lot of the corporate women that I work are moms. And so they began to have to take their job hat off and put on mom hat, teacher hat, at home hat, and they were not able to do it all. And so while I saw my business suffer last year because the moms that I support are working from home now and they have their kids at home and they're trying to make sure they still get educated and all of that stuff that then happened, there was a significant impact on my job, on my business last year. This year, though, has been the best year I have ever had because a lot of people woke up to the fact that, wait a minute, I actually like working from home. Yeah. Or I can work from home. So then what does that then look like? So then we're having conversations about how to advocate for yourself, about your productivity and things that you can now do in the workplace that nobody thought were possible. Oh, this is a job that nobody could do from home. Or I just like FaceTime, but do you need it every day? Like there was all kinds of flexibility that then entered the workforce that have opened up the door to conversations that are like, really, you know, I can work from home.
Right.
Or I can leave the office at 3 o'clock to get my kids off the school bus and then finish up the last hour and a half of my day, 2 hours of my day while they're having a snack and, you know, or whatever, and unwinding from their day. Like there's flexibility that has now entered into the conversation. So this has been my best year ever from a client type conversation. Oh, and let me just rewind from last year in 2020, while I had all this break of, yes, it was, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of clients because they were like, I'm sorry, coaching is a luxury. It just is. And I can't afford that anymore because I'm not working or I was laid off or whatever. That's when I wrote my book. And so it wasn't unfruitful time. It was just time that looked different.
You pivoted also. You did your great big pivot and you're like, hey, let me take advantage of this moment.
That's right.
Of downtime.
Now, yeah. Let's finally write down all the things that, because what I find is people want to know about the people they hire as coach. What's your backstory?
Right.
And this is my backstory. And this is how my process was to walk through it. Not everyone will hire a coach. And I realized that, but I wanted to put a tool in people's hands that are like, if you, you know, resonate with my life, with my story, with my belief system, this is how I did it. And you can do it on your own. If this is the path you choose, or you could partner with a coach and get there faster. So that's kind of what happened in 2020. And then this year, my business has exploded. I have way more clients than I've ever had. And it's, you know, kind of causing me to shift some things around and be like, all right, what does this now look like? How many one-on-one clients do I actually want to have versus do I want to have then groups? And what does that look like? And so, you know, I'm always in this state of surrendering how it is right now to kind of say, what's the next best way to serve people? And how can I, what does that look like in this season?
Absolutely.
So that's kind of what this year has been looked like. And the questions I've been asking myself as a business owner to say, because it doesn't look the same and I can't expect it to look the same.
Right. No, absolutely. And I think, I mean, congratulations on both the book and of course on being able to have a comeback that's stronger than before. I mean, that's brilliant. And I love the idea that your coaching has taken a little twist and turn, even in the way in which you're now dialoguing with your clients. It's like now they're just trying to figure out, how do I negotiate this new, very flexible life? How do I keep intact me, the person, and not have to switch hats? Like, how do I just wear one hat and just be everything I need to be, both myself, my family, and of course, the role at my company? And how do I do that or continue to do that successfully without making it harder? Because it was harder before, and now I know this. Because as hard as it is to be at home 24/7, we also know that the structure of the at office scenario is just not everything that everyone thought it was. And like you said, there's been plenty of success in doing the job remotely, wherever that is. And so how do we keep people in that very, very comfortable and productive seat so that they can still be successful and not have to give up the work? That's really what it is at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So bravo that you're finding a new way to help people negotiate their current positions, because I think that that's exactly the kind of support that many people still now need. I mean, where I live, people have just in the last 30 days started to return to an in-office situation, and it's not 5 days a week, not even anywhere close. I have people that I know that are going back 1 day a week, and it's not their decision. It was the company decision to say, let's ease into this. You know, we understand, and thankfully many companies are understanding. So
yeah, it's a big shift. My husband and I were having this conversation about the changes that happened in life after the Spanish flu. So the Spanish flu was like 1918. And right after that point, they introduced the guest bath. And so this was just a hallway bathroom with just, you know, just a sink and a toilet, right? So that way, no, the guests don't use the main bathrooms because that's where they were concerned about germs came from. So the bath, the guest bathroom, the hall bath came out of, you know, this whole Spanish flu from, you know, almost
that's fantastic.
And so we're going to be, here we are at another pivot where we're going to start to realize something is going to change about the way homes are designed or the way work is designed, all because of what we just walked through. Was it pretty? Absolutely not. But we've learned, we've been able to adapt and adjust. And I've had clients come to me and be like, I love the office. I hate the commute. And so then what does that look like? Because then they realized how much of their time they actually spent in bumper to bumper traffic. And then they realized this is not the life that I wanted.
That's right.
One of the whole reasons my husband and I even moved in the last year and a half is because his office moved from the south side of Denver to the north side of Denver, and that added a significant commute. Well, we're from the East Coast. We know what that traffic looks like. We're like,
we
didn't move out to the mountains for that.
Right.
We're not doing that again. So we had no problems, you know, picking up our roots and going to be repotted someplace else because we recognized that family time was a high value for us. Well, now there's a lot of people that are realizing that their commute, you know, is not time that they want to give up anymore. And so they're starting to question what
1, 2, 3 hours a day. I mean, that is your community time with your family. Let's face it. That is so significant. That is all the things that you say, I don't have time for. It's wrapped up right there in that commute time. I lived that life like you did on the East Coast. I know exactly how it feels. And it's a game changer when you don't have that in play any longer. Everything changes. Your whole life can be completely different. Your health changes. Everything just is different, and it's beautiful, and it really does matter. So yeah, I think that's terrific that you were nimble enough to say, hey, we don't want to go back to that kind of a life. Let's just put ourselves where we're best positioned. Good for
and
you.
It's about learning the lessons we've learned before and realizing that, wait a minute, I've done this. This looks familiar and I don't like it. And when we can live in a life that doesn't have as much stress, so we can recognize those patterns when they start to come up again, then we can be like, oh, wait a minute, this looks familiar and I've already made a choice to do something different. I'm going to make sure that that doesn't encroach on my time like it did before. Or when we're on a new health journey and all of a sudden we're starting to see changes in our bodies and we're starting to be like, okay, wait a minute. Now I don't need whatever that was. And we can begin to change our habits because we recognize the positive changes that have been happening. And we can then be smarter about our choices because we see the difference.
Boundaries. I love the conversation about boundaries.
Yes, absolutely.
And setting our own for ourselves is where it all begins. So yeah, no, I think that's a beautiful and brilliant concept. One that more and more needs to take place for sure. Well, it's been really good chatting. And I just want to like leap off with letting the listeners know that we're going to post some really great messages for them. We're going to leave them with a couple of little gifts and passages. And certainly we're going to include your book title and your website, because like you have mentioned earlier, you have a style, you have a faith-based perspective, and there is something for everyone out there. And I, you know, obviously, as you know, from your own success, you know, there are people who want to be able to integrate and take that part of themselves into their journey, into their space, and let it function within the skills of their day-to-day living. And that includes their career path. So I want to make sure that we fortify the listeners with, you know, every bit of who you are. And I just really appreciate you being here, Sherilyn. It's been like a terrific conversation. So thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you. I love how you help us realize that it's from the detours that we can really step into what we're called to do and what our purpose is, because that's really where we find the life we were meant to have, is embracing those detours and saying, what is this meant to teach me? So thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And that's such a wonderful way of wrapping it. Thank you. And I appreciate that, because I believe that it's usually in those moments when we have the most discovery. That's right. You've hit it. That's exactly right. So just to make sure we verbalize this as well, when we post this in the show notes, but to also know that you could go to sherilyndecker.com/dreamsanddetours. I will have that all spelled out for a passage that is being left just for you. So thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Yay. That's it for this episode of Dreams and Detours. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe and share it with your friends. You can find me at dreamsdetours.com and at dreamsdetours on Instagram. Thanks for listening.